The Air Force is reorganizing its entire space workforce and adding new training programs, all designed to get its personnel ready to operate systems in what the Air Force says is no longer a benign environment. Colonel Dean Snigowski is the Total Force Lead for the Space Mission Force. He spoke with Federal News Radio's Jared Serbu about the changes ahead.
Air Force Space Command, you know, really has a long history of providing, you know, space capabilities, vital to the defense of our nation. The training and skills that sustained our space operations for the last few decades are not the same skills we need today to win in the environment that's contested, degraded, and operationally limited, as we've seen. This is why we're transforming our culture, and really it is a culture change, and I'll speak more to that a little bit later, but Space Mission Force is the answer, and space is no longer a sanctuary where Space Command and our mission partners can operate without interference. In the future, our adversaries who are intent on disrupting or denying access to our space capabilities are going to attempt to oppose risks at a pace we have not yet seen yet, and we got to prepare for it. We've already seen some countries perform live testing of anti-satellite weapons capabilities in removing their own spacecraft. And if they have the ability to destroy their systems, they can destroy ours. The Space Mission Force construct allows us to revamp our crews to better respond to threats in a dynamic environment. And it really is going to help our crews balance experience and training, better support the combatant commander requirements.
Since you teed up the culture piece, let me just ask you to go ahead and expand on that right now. What is the current culture that we have now versus the end state that you're trying to achieve?
Well, our current culture, our operators, our space crew members are really, they're outstanding, top-notch, world-class members of the Air Force. They're more talented and better educated than ever before. They have a thorough knowledge of how the system operates. They can detect and fix anomalies and faults, but they're a little bit lacking in the adversary threats, the different things that can be done to our systems that they need to work around. So we're trying to get them to that point where if they see a fault or an anomaly, that it might not be that fault. It could be adversary action. They might have to work around that threat.
And I'll ask you to get a little bit more specific on that in a second.
Sure,
but we should zoom out for a minute. And why don't you give us some sense of the size of the overall workforce that you're trying to transform here? And since you have the words total force in your duty title, how do the Guard and Reserve play into this construct?
Well, the Guard and Reserve are very instrumental to this because the amount of mission space and a lot of the continuity and expertise reside in the Guard and Reserve as well. A little bit older of a force, a little bit more seasoned, if you will, but they're part of this Space Mission Force implementation as well. They're going to be, shoulder to shoulder working with the REGAF, Regular Air Force crew members, and supporting Space Mission Force as far as from the mission planning standpoint to advanced training to actually operating the system. So they'll be there as part of all mission areas. And a lot of our space forces do have reserve and guard support right now. And so they're going to be part of this endeavor. They're going to bring the adversary actions, that piece, and start reacting and training to be able to fight through that contested, deny, and operationally limited environment.
You mentioned earlier that the current culture really isn't that well equipped to deal with that thinking adversary. Is that just a matter of there already being some of those skill sets resident within the Air Force and you just don't have enough capacity in that respect? Or do you have to start from scratch here and build new doctrine, build new training, and create an entirely new concept here?
Not at all. Our, like I said earlier, our operators are fantastic. They just haven't looked through it through that lens before. They were more concerned about operating the system properly, maintaining the health and wellness of the constellations, or if it's a space warning system or a missile warning system, making sure that the system is working properly and providing that primary mission. We're teaching them how to look at it from a different point of view, taking a step back and looking at what the adversaries can do to us, not only terrestrially, but whether it's on space or even cyberspace, to complicate their mission and accomplishing their job. And they're smart and talented individuals on crew, but it's just a different way of looking at the threats that are out there.
As a practical matter, then, what does this actually mean for members of space crews in terms of the time that they spend training, the kinds of training that they do, and the dwell time in between those training cycles?
Well, right, so far the 50th Space Wing is the first to implement. They went back to they started SMF back in February. The 21st has implemented part of it this past July, and the 614th and the 460th will transition to Space Mission Force next year. Really not going to change as far as personnel, but the duration of the SMF cycles, as you talked about, right now the 50th is doing 4 month rotation, with the first 4 months being called what is the Space Mission Task Force, essentially the day-to-day mission of the squadron they are accomplishing. And really what that's trying to do is separate all the extraneous activities that we levy on our crew force as far as admin. Even we try to encourage them not to take leave during those time frames or pursue professional military education. And then when they come to their dwell cycle is really when we start getting that advanced training piece, and we bring that on board, get them into exercise support such as Red Flag, where they can exercise those adversary threats and start looking at, you know, what the bad guys are trying to do to disrupt their mission. Gives them the opportunity to think outside the box and really dive into what the bad guys want to do to us and how to work around that. So it's going to be different for every wing depending on the mission that they support. But right now, 4 months is kind of the on-off, is a template.
Colonel, the white paper talks about one of the objectives of the Space Mission Force being able to deny the capability to freely operate in space if necessary, denying that capability to an adversary. Can you talk a bit more about what that denial approach sort of looks like as you sort through these concepts?
Absolutely. We want to have the ability to utilize our space resources and to operate in a time and a manner that we deem necessary for operational requirements. We want to make sure that the enemy does not dictate when we do things, where we do things, and how we do things. So part of the Space Mission Force is to teach our operators how to maximize the effects that our systems have and to use them at the whim, but at the need and the requirement of the combatant commander to achieve the goals of the mission that they're supporting at that time is really what we're looking for there.
This effort seems like it's mostly centered, or most of the implications of it really are on the workforce. But I wonder if this transformation that you've been talking about has any implications for the way the Air Force acquires space-based capabilities or what it acquires.
Well, there really shouldn't be too much as far as acquisitions. We need to invest more in our aggressor and our range support that works directly with our space forces and to train them, to get them better, to become more polished at their craft. But there are some needs for different simulators to integrate into the live virtual constructive environment for exercises. Getting back to what we talked about as far as the faults and anomalies in our space crew members, our systems have got to be able to show the operator that something that might be an anomaly is actually adversary action. And this really goes for our operational system as well as our simulators, so they can differentiate between there's something wrong to there's something wrong because the adversary is trying to do something to us. And that's really probably the biggest acquisition question that is going to arrive from this. The training piece is big, and we are addressing that, you know, robustly. But we need to make sure that our systems are telling us the truth, and the enemy has a vote, and we have to make sure we can detect that and work through that CDO, that's contested, denied, operational limited environment.
Share this story with colleagues. Go to federalnewsradio.com/federaldrive and click share with friends.